Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of Triple Play. Don't forget to like, subscribe. Don't forget to support those that support us. Our main sponsor is Brooks Bible College. We love Brooks Bible College. If you're looking to get into a biblical area or want to get into biblical counseling, consider Brooks Bible College. You're here in the Midwest. They pride themselves on making sure you get a great education that you can use in the church, okay, or in a chosen field that requires a biblical degree like missionary, and at an affordable cost, so you're not coming out of college with a ton of debt and not able to serve the Lord. So consider Brooks Bible College. Their information will be in the show notes. That said, I'm excited about today's guest. Even though my co-host is still out while he's coaching right now, I still get some baseball in here. We're going to actually have a lot in the next few weeks, so it's going to be fun. But today I have Mike Castello. Do you like to be called Michael or Mike?
It really doesn't matter to me.
All right.
So I've had, it shortens up when I'm on the field. So
Yo, Mike?
Yeah, everyone just calls me Mike. But I usually go by Michael. That's usually how I get approached by.
They don't call you C-Man?
I wish. I got called Casty before.
Casty, all right.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Yeah, Slike gets called Slikey a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a sick one.
Yeah, Scott was known in the clubhouse with the Dodgers as Slikey a lot.
Wow.
So, that's. I didn't know that until we started having like Josh Beck and some of the guys on. So, Well, cool. It's good to have you here. I started getting to know you at the gym a little bit, found out that you're pitching, and you were with the Arizona Diamondbacks club, right?
Yeah. So I'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
This I think you'll find interesting.
Well, yeah. Tell me about your journey. I was going to ask you, tell us about your journey, a little bit where you grew up too. I know you said you're not from St. Louis originally. So tell our listeners a little bit of where you grew up. How'd you get in baseball? And then walk us into your journey. I'm just here to listen.
So I am a left-handed pitcher for the Ogden Raptors. So you remember that whole shakedown that they had back in like 2-3 years ago with all the minor league teams, how they went from that 120 to the 90.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my team was unfortunately part of it when they did that whole shakedown.
Okay.
And that's the team that I'm with now. They used to be part of the Brewers. From what I remember, they used to be part of the Brewers, the Dodgers, and now they're with the Diamondbacks, from what I remember. And so it is a MLB Partner League in the Pioneer League.
Okay.
And I say this a lot. I tell a lot of people that it's at Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and things like that. Because you'd be surprised about how many folks have not really a baseball sense in what they know.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a few times. So you know how I work at Club Fitness. I used to work at Planet Fitness prior to coming there.
So you switched, right?
Yeah, it's a whole ordeal. I went from playing in season to going to Australia to pitch and then coming back. It was a whole situation.
Want a random fact?
Yeah.
That you'll love?
Yeah.
And that you did pitch in Australia, right? Who do you think's the first Major League Baseball that home run in Australia?
Ooh, that's a good one.
He's also the first one to hit a Major League home run outside of the continental North America. So from Mexico to Toronto,
that's a good
first guy to ever hit a home run out of continental North America or the North America. And the first one to ever hit one in Australia was the same guy.
Oh, that's a good one.
Same time, same place. I'm sitting in the guy's seat that usually is here.
Is it Van Slyke?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep. There, Dodgers were playing a major league series. It was when they first started doing these series outside the continental USA, right at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And the first one was the Dodgers over in Australia. And so Scotty, hit a home run. Wow. And became the first Major League Baseball player to hit a home run outside of North America in Major League Baseball, and the first one to hit one in Australia all at the same time.
Wow.
So there you go. Go ahead. Sorry.
No,
got to brag about my co-host who's normally here.
It's all good. No, so I get done with my season. And so originally I played for the Alpine Cowboys in the Pecos League. That's where I started from.
How'd you get into that, though?
So it all started back in community college.
Okay.
Well, I was telling you earlier.
Did you play in high school?
I did not.
Really? So where'd you grow up?
So I'm originally from Des Moines, Iowa.
Okay.
Des Moines, Iowa. And because my dad used to work for Monsanto, prior to them getting bought out by Bayer, we moved from Iowa to Augusta, Georgia, to New Orleans, and then from New Orleans to here.
Wow. So a lot of moving. A lot of moving with the job. But he stayed with the whole time with Monsanto at that time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So our whole family moved all the way to Missouri, to here. And it was finally old enough for me to play high school baseball.
Okay.
And I'm excited. I'm absolutely excited. I didn't know a whole lot of people. You know, I'm brand new to the scene. I'm trying to figure out things like that.
And you had no shot, did you?
No.
That is high school baseball. I had this conversation the other day. Like, these people love their little league, select league, or whoever's their neighbor's kid or booster kid. And they let these kids play. And you're going, wait. I know. 2 years ago, I had one of my youth from youth group.
Mm-hmm.
Kid is a stud. It's played select leagues. It lives and breathes baseball. His mom was a softball pitcher for Mizzou.
Wow, yeah.
Great family, baseball family. Kids worked with some of the greatest baseball names that have come through St. Louis at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very skilled. And he goes to high school, and they make him ride the bench. And the guy who's in his position is like 0-35.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Why would you let a kid bat 0-35 when you got a kid who's coming off the bench and hitting it one out of every two times?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. They usually go it off of, like, so they have booster clubs.
Yeah.
From middle school, all those kids that play in the middle school baseball teams, all their parents that donate, they have those kids try out for high school. And they're probably going to pick him.
That's exactly right. That's what happened to him. And it's like, this is crazy. Eventually, he made his way, and it became so obvious that they had to play the kid that all he did was work hard and play better than anybody else on the field. And eventually, it was undeniable. But you came up there. You're going to play baseball in high school, and nada.
And nothing. Well, it was my freshman year of high school, and I wanted to play baseball so bad. I wanted to play. So I graduated from Marquette High School, which is in Chesterfield. You probably know that area a little bit.
I do.
So I graduated from there, but my freshman year, I got cut from that high school team. And I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I remember, I actually do strictly remember this. I was in the back seat of my mom's car, and I was bawling my eyes out because I just got the word that I got cut. Absolutely. I was crying. I was tearing up everything. And so my dad, he goes, you know what? You don't need that anyway. If they're going to do politics like that, because at the time I was 14 throwing 80, 81.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So for them,
they should have been all and a lefty.
Yeah.
A lefty throwing 80, 81.
Yeah.
At 14 years old. That is the perfect kid to develop.
Right. So he goes, you don't need that anyway. And he started looking up all these different options for baseball. And have you ever heard of Perfect Game?
Absolutely.
So he looked up Perfect Game and he showed my mom. And my mom goes, holy crap, you won't believe this. She looks at every single one of those names and she pinpoints a handful of guys. She goes, my dad used to teach their dads back in high school.
Oh, that's cool.
He was the one that taught them all their different courses and things. So she calls him up. She goes, hey, my son just got cut from high school baseball. Is there a way we could come up and try out or do a showcase or whatever? And she goes, my name's Sharon Yillick. That's her maiden name.
Yeah.
But as soon as she said that maiden name, they go, oh my gosh.
Coach Yillick, yeah.
And so they said, come on up. Come on up.
That's awesome.
And so I went up there and I pitched a little bit and they go, you know what? Doesn't make sense. The fact that you got cut. We have fall and spring leagues here up in Iowa. Cause that's where they're based out of, is Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Sure.
And they go, we have fall and spring leagues. Why don't you just come up and play in those? So I said, okay. And so in the meantime, I was doing track and field at Marquette. And so that whole week I would be doing track and field at Marquette. And then on the weekends I would go up to Iowa and go play. So me and my dad would drive the 5-6 hours all around Iowa to go play.
I bet you're super close to your dad now.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of man time. And that's cool because it helps develop you as a man. We talk about that here on our podcast a lot, that men investing in their sons and having that time together is so key.
It's important.
Yeah.
Because I think what truly, in terms of like religion, faith, it rubs off on their kids.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I think that absolutely. That if there's not a good presence with the father, I think it'll absolutely tear a kid apart.
Yeah, leadership starts in the head of the house, right?
Yes.
And no, I am, hopefully that's the father of most houses.
Mm-hmm. But I am exponentially thankful that my dad did that for me.
That's awesome. So you guys are going up every week. You did this through high school.
All 4 years.
And now you make it to college, junior college. Where did you go to junior college?
So I went to community college or junior college at St. Charles.
Okay. And you made their team.
I did.
Okay. So
prior to that, I would say year three or four in high school. I said, you know what? I don't care where, I want to play college baseball. I said, that's the next thing. That's the goal. I don't care where, I don't care who, I don't care how, I'm going to go play college baseball. And so one school that did reach out was Culver Stockton College.
Okay.
It's right on the border of North Missouri.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that actually got me in there. Now, it didn't really go well the second year because I'm not going to talk about it. You know, like it was serious drug related stuff that happened at that school.
Oh, so like, the school had a lot of issues.
Yeah. So they had a lot of issues with the coaches. They had a lot of issues with the professors.
And so you just got away. Well, you weren't involved in it. So
I was not involved with it, but I said, I'm just going to leave before it just gets worse.
Right.
At the time, they didn't want me to play because I was a freshman. And then.
Yeah, compounded with all that issues. If I saw that going around, I'm like, dude, I'm out of here. I don't want that kind of stuff around me because that's career ending, right? Like you get caught, even if you're in the car with somebody who has possession, it could be a great guy, a good friend.
Right.
You know, your friend has a couple ounces of coke. You're now, you're part of that. You're somehow entangled in this thing and it could be career ending. I feel that all the time. Like I'm always cautious with the characters that I hang out with. And if they're your teammates, that's hard not to hang out with. Right.
And so prior to that, I'm not going to say the coach's name because I don't think it's fair to him.
Yeah.
But I remember going in the start of my sophomore year and I said, hey, listen, I understand you don't like freshmen starting because they don't have experience. I understand that. But I said, is there a way that I could at least get a shot? Because I don't want to wait until I'm a junior. Because I feel like that would just be wasting my time. And after a long conversation, he essentially said that I would be I was a recruit flop for him.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And so during that time, he told me I was a flop. My grades are going down because I'm getting upset. Like, it was just a whole downward spiral. And I said, you know what? I don't want any part of this. So I remember I was sitting on stairs and I was just crying, calling my dad. And I said, you know what? I need to leave. I need to get out of here. I truly believe I need to get out of here. And so the best thing that we were looking that was kind of close was St. Charles. And Coach Gober, he used to be the head of St. Charles.
Sure.
At the time, I called him and I explained to him the entire situation. And so they ended up giving me a nice scholarship to get there.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Which I was happy with because it covered a lot of the expenses.
You were talking about the Lord, and it seems like the Lord's directing your steps, even though you don't know it, even though there's just all this stuff going on that you're questioning to some degree, but it seems like the Lord's directing your steps and giving you wisdom to get out of these situations.
Well, I've always been praying about stuff like that. And the one thing that I find extra cool was during that time in Perfect Game, going up there on the weekends, we had to play on Sundays. Well, the closest church we had on those Sundays was a dual language church.
So they
that's
fun.
First half in English, the second half in Spanish. And so I don't speak a whole lot of Spanish, but it was kind of cool just to see that transition in the middle of Mass where they went from English straight to Spanish.
That would be fun.
I thought that was probably the best part about it. But when I went to St. Charles, I remember I got a chance to do my first outing and I pooped the bed. I absolutely just sucked. And so I was upset. I was absolutely distraught. And so second outing comes around. I get a decent shot. They just pulled the starter after like two innings.
So were you a reliever?
I was a reliever. Yes.
Okay. Lefty reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that what you're at today?
Yeah.
Okay. Just always like to double check.
Yeah.
Tommy Lane kind of bounced between a reliever and a starter. So I always
I did both when I was in Australia, but I really do like the relieving role.
So you're leaving for St. Charles Community.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And I finally get a chance to do a second outing, and I tear it up. I absolutely tear it up.
That's awesome.
And so he said, yo, if you keep doing this, you'll be our number one guy, number two even. We just need you out of the pen. And so sure enough, I can't remember because it was a while ago. I can't remember if it was either the third or fourth outing I had at St. Charles where I break my olecranon bone in my elbow.
So show everybody where that's at. So you're throwing, and you said you were throwing, what were you throwing?
I was throwing
the changeup.
So yeah. The olecranon bone is a little part of the bone right here that attaches to the tricep.
Correct.
And all that. Now, I don't exactly know how I did it.
But you're throwing a changeup. Show us how when you're throwing a changeup, you're kind of going in and show them so that, and your elbow turns a little bit. So that would make sense. I mean, that's why that happened, is you had that pressure against that bone there.
Yeah.
So.
And I remember when
you're throwing, how fast are you throwing at that time? Were you still throwing 80, 81? I imagine I
was
from 14. You're probably what, high 80s?
I would say I was probably mid 80s.
Okay.
Like 85-ish, if I remember right.
Okay. That's fair. I would have thought community college, you're probably between 85, 88 right there, what I would have thought in my head. So,
right.
Because that tends to be that area. You're making those maturity steps. Your arm strength starting to build up a little bit because you've been pitching for a while. So.
Right. So I ended up breaking it, and I remember because it happened in game. And it was, I think it was a 2-2 count, if I remember right. It was a like a kneed out on a count. And I remember throwing that changeup and all pressure just leaves on the arm. My adrenaline was so high, I didn't feel it at first. So my arm was hanging, I couldn't move it. But I said, you know what? I need to get this guy. I really do need to get this guy. So even though I couldn't move my arm, I couldn't feel it, I went to go throw a second one. And it went like 59 all the way to the plate. And then after that, I just looked at the catcher and then I just turtled backwards and just fell on my back. And I remember that's when the pain started setting in. So I just started screaming and all that. But yeah, that was right there. With that alone, they told me it was like 12-week rehab without any screws or anything like that. And so I go through all the rehab. I do all that stuff that I needed to through all the doctors. And sure enough, I'm getting ready to throw again. I get the green light and I break it again. And so this time I wasn't playing. I said, you know what? It's probably going to happen a third time. I just want to get the screw. I really do need this screw. Because they said that's the invasive way on how to fix it other than just letting it heal. And so they said, okay. And the incision itself was probably about the size of a dime. Because
It's just a small one, but it's long.
I wish I brought it with me because I would have shown you. Because it's all out of titanium. It's actually pretty nice screw. But no, so I was going through all that. And I don't really know how it got infected. I just remember going to a Panda Express, going to eat after the surgery. And I was like, wow, my elbow itches, it itches really bad. And so I get to go looked at. They go, oh, it's infected. And so it got to the point where they said, hey, we can't take the screw out because the bone's not healed, but the screw and everything around it is infected. So the only thing we can do is drain all the stuff out, pretty much just pump your body full of antibiotics and then just wait and then take it out. So
what you thought was going to help you heal quicker now is taking a lot longer.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So the second surgery, they went in and they started cleaning out a whole bunch of the elbow. And then the third one is when they actually took it out. And I remember being in the hospital for I don't know if it was 2 weeks because I was just losing my mind, but I was in there for quite a while. And afterwards, I get through all the surgeries and I go, you know what? There's light at the end of the tunnel. I just know. I just have a feeling. Lights at the end of the tunnel. And so finally, I get done with all the surgeries. I finally get a chance to go back up on the mound. And I'm like 75, which isn't bad. I expected it coming off of elbow surgery.
Yeah, especially when it took longer, right?
Right. And so I was still at the time. It's like, hey, my time at, because this was going through all of St. Charles Community College.
Okay.
So that right there those last three or four outings that I had prior to that injury, those and maybe two more outings was the ones that I've only had at St. Charles. I'll have to relook at it, but it was very minuscule on the outings in terms of innings pitched. And I won't forget it. I was going in there and I said, hey, I need to find a new school. I need to find a 4-year I need to go to. And Coach Foster, who is the hitting coach at St. Charles at the time, put my name into a school called Missouri Valley College. And those guys responded to me immediately. And so I went on a couple more trips, go visit different schools and things like that. But it really appealed to me to Missouri Valley College. When I first started going there, I really liked the setup. I didn't realize, not that it's bad, but it wasn't that good, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't top of the line, but right. But
it did the job.
Yeah.
It did the job. I knew I was going there to study and then to also play baseball, which is...
Yeah, what you wanted to do. I want to study, get a degree, but I want to, you know, that's awesome.
That's when the pursuing of professional baseball really started to kick in.
Okay. And how are you doing at Missouri Valley now? Are you pitching? You getting your velocity back up, getting it kind of rolling?
I got it up to 88.
Woo! So you did.
Yeah, there at Missouri Valley. I was going through the yips there as well.
Did you said you at one point before we had this discussion that you were struggling a little bit with your trusting your changeup? Are you struggling with it at that time, or have you worked through that?
Okay, I worked through it now, but prior to that, I was still a little wigged out by it.
Yeah, because it hurt you, and so the mental part of that of coming over the fact that this injury happened because of this pitch, and I don't want to quite do that or trust it as much. Right. And it wasn't your primary pitch. You said it was like a third or fourth pitch. Yeah. So it was one that you utilized to mix it up, but it's an important mix up. I mean, you know, it is eventually you got to throw it if you're going to be successful long term. Right. And so somewhere along the line, when did you learn to trust on that again? Was that while in that college or was it after?
Well, it was the same logic that you just said. I knew whether regardless that if I wanted to be successful, I'd have to throw it. Like there's no option. So that kind of, I was starting to figure that out at Missouri Valley. I didn't throw it a whole lot. I was still trying to figure out where that 88 was going. You know, I was walking a whole lot of guys.
You got up fast in velocity, but your control wasn't pinpoint. So you're hitting the catcher, but you weren't getting it slotted where you really wanted to pinpoint it. So you're trying to hit the edge, and now you're hitting the center, or you're trying to hit the center, you're hitting the edge. It just wasn't getting into the position that you wanted. So that, you know, I get that. So,
and so that's really when the professional drive kicked in, where I was like, hey, I really need to play. Like,
did you tell your dad that?
Yeah, I did.
All right.
He was supportive about it. He liked it.
He's got to be, because there's going to be a time where, you know, when you're going to pro, unless you're drafted high, which right now you got the yips, you're coming out of the, you know, you got this ability, but I've got to hone it still. It's still got to continue to mature. And, you know, that's why we have minor leagues. That's why we have alternative leagues, for people to master that skill and hopefully make it up. You know, people talk about alternative leagues like sometimes, and they don't always know the names.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my favorite things about the alternative leagues, I don't know if you've looked this up, but it's great. One of the coaches for Seattle took over one of the leagues up there in Minnesota. And this was in the either late 80s or early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this player called King Griffey Jr. who really liked him and knew him real well. And another player named Aaron Rodriguez that were budding superstars for the Seattle Mariners at the time. And he invited them because I think they were playing the Twins to swing by this minor league ballpark. That wasn't, you know, like a single A or whatever, just an affiliate.
Right.
And play and do a home run hitting contest to try to bring in crowds.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go up and do their thing, and, you know, they're like, you know, 4-for-10 or whatever, right? Or 3-for-10. And, you know, it's fun. You know, it's A-Rod and King Griffey Jr., right?
Right.
So now this alternative league goes up, and this kid just starts popping them, and they're like, what? And seriously, this is a true story. You can watch it. There's actually a video of this on YouTube. And they're like, they're just losing it. And they're like looking at each other going, are you serious watching this guy just crank them out of the park one after another? Do you know who it was?
Who?
Big Poppy.
Oh.
Big Poppy.
I should have guessed.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Big Poppy was not even in real, you know, like playing professional baseball. He was an alternative linked up league with, I think that was with the Expos at the time.
Yeah. I was about to say that had to be Montreal, right?
Yeah. I think it was with the Expos. And so, but yeah. So anyways, this coach, but it started getting his exposure because that made, you know, A-Rod and, King Griffey couldn't help but talk about that cat because they were so impressed. I mean, he was like 8 for 10 and they were just blasted out of there. It was crazy.
Wow.
It's fun to watch on. If you get a chance, YouTube it. It's a fun one. So
I got plenty of time to YouTube. I'll definitely look at it.
That one's a fun one. So, but yeah, so, you know, these alternative leagues, these single A's and all are made to help develop your talent, right? So you're thinking, I want to go pro. I want to go on past my college career.
Right.
Your dad's supportive.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that happen? What do you do next?
Well, so I remember I was talented because it was at this point, it was driving me crazy because I couldn't figure out how to go pro. Right. I think that's a big missing key in a lot of people when they want to like do something in baseball. They want to do it, but it's difficult when they don't know how or you don't have the resources to know how.
Yeah. Unless you're a top recruit. Right. I mean, unless then people are coming to you and asking how, right. You know, will you consider, right. Can we draft you? That's not you. You know, you got talent. You know, lefties are in short supply.
Right.
That's always a plus. The fact that you're left-handed throwing 88 is a huge plus.
Right. So it really helped me out. But this is what I think when I tell you about faith and religion and all that. So push comes to shove. It's my senior year at Missouri Valley College. I was trying to figure out how to go pro, how to do it. I was looking up all sorts of teams in English class on my laptop, typing it all up, trying to figure out, okay, I could probably reach out to teams the same way I reached out to colleges. You just email them and things like that. And so I was doing all that research and I looked and I said, okay, I'm not a top recruit. I'm not a top prospect. I'm not a number one that's going to get drafted. Where's my best bet to just open the door into the pro level? Where's that at? And the first team that came to me like that was the Alpine Cowboys. Now, the manager himself, best manager I think I'll ever have.
Where was the Alpine Cowboys at? Where are they located?
So they're in a town called Alpine, but it's about 2.5 hours east of El Paso.
Okay.
So it's...
Who is the manager?
Sean Persky.
And who is the... do you know who the president running the operation was?
Yes. Her name is Kristen Kavnis.
Okay.
And so it's a legit setup out there.
It's a legit setup.
Do you?
Yeah. I know people who... So I had a friend of mine. So one of the contacts that introduced me to Scotty a long, long time ago is a guy named Dave Cost. He ran two of those leagues down in Texas. And so did Joe McGrain. Do you know Joe McGrain?
Sounds familiar.
He was a former player for the St. Louis Cardinals, and he is a president of operations for, I think, three of those teams down in Texas. I mean, there's a whole slew of them down there that play Southern and that Texas league, I guess. I don't know if it's considered a league, but, you know, kind of a alternative. So, yeah. So
I reached out to this guy, and he responds back almost instantly. I remember this because I was sitting in the cafeteria. I said, I'm going to compose this really nice email for this guy, type it up. It's going to go great. And so I typed it all up, sent it to him. Probably about 20 minutes later, he responds back. He's like, hey, I'm interested. Can you write up a baseball resume with data, velos, statistics? If you have RPMs of your sliders, your fastballs, or for me, it's cutters. Which I was about to get into that earlier. So it all started back when I was like 14 and I was still trying to figure out how to pitch and everything. And the main one was the four seam. Now I can throw a four seam, but it just, for me, the grip didn't feel right. Like gripping a four seam in my hand. And so I would slowly, slowly tilt that four seam.
Hold on here. Well, We're
going
to do it right, my friend.
Awesome.
So,
wow, yeah.
Ripping it?
Yeah, so the original four seam, a lot of people, would be like this.
Correct.
Now, for me, it doesn't feel good because I don't like how the fact my middle finger's over the seam.
And show them, why is it four seam? Because you're if they look at the curves, the curvatures, you're hitting over four seams.
Right.
So with your two fingers, you're hitting those two seams, you know. So I just wanted to kind of show.
Can they see on the camera?
I don't know if they can see, but just I can see how you're holding it. Yeah, like right. that. So you're kind of holding it, and you've got these seams. So, all right. Well,
for me, it didn't really feel all that good.
Okay.
Throwing it. So I would move it ever so slightly so that way both the fingertips.
Are hitting the tops of the seams.
Would hit the tops of the seams. Well, I didn't know at the time that it was just, for me, it was a very primitive cutter. And so every time I'd throw it, it always move. And
yeah, because you're moving the way that the direction of that ball spins. When it's spinning, now you're moving that direction, and now it's giving it some kind of movement. Anytime you move seams, those seams are, as it rotates, for those listening, as those seams start to rotate, mm-hmm. that causes movement within that ball. Because you're creating friction in the air. So,
right.
And then depending on how you're doing this on your slot of your arm mm-hmm. and elbow, right? So depending what throw you are, usually you're either using your back of your, you know, a lot of pressure comes from the back of your shoulder, depending mm-hmm. on the throw, or it's going to come from the snap of your arm mm-hmm. and all the energy and momentum is going to come from your legs.
So for me, when I throw it, I come from about, I don't know if they can see it on camera, but it's about, like a low 3/4.
Okay.
I would say. So it's not necessarily sidearm like this, but it's just a little bit higher.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's not an unnatural slot, though. You see, I find more lefties do that, too.
Yeah.
See that? I see a lot of lefties kind of coming. Mm-hmm. They don't do a full, like, up or over. They come a little more, not quite sidearm, but they seem to be. I think it's more of a lefty type of mentality.
I would say I've seen a lot of lefties that throw like that. They're not quite
up
high and on arm slot, but they're not
down low. Either. Yeah, that
about I'd say right here. I've seen a lot out of lefties actually.
That's what I was going to say. It seems like that's kind of a natural.
Yeah,
there's certain things I find natural. You know, like I tell people if you see like Tommy John surgery mm-hmm. on a righty, mm-hmm. people come back, they're better than ever. They usually pitch better than ever. Mm-hmm. How many lefties?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, it's weird. Tommy John to a lefty, you don't see too many of them come back and are extremely better after Tommy John.
Well,
they can get back to what they were. Usually that's good.
So originally prior to my three surgeries, my arm slot was like up here. It was like a very high, not.
So you did kind of a whip down.
Yeah.
By going to side, it added probably that extra 3 to 4 miles an hour that you did, that you added down the road.
Well, that, and I didn't really do, I would say I did a lot of training, but I didn't really have like a trainer or a facility to work on stuff. It was just kind of on the weekends I would go play.
Yeah. So you just, all your, and you probably weren't working out a ton. Most of my baseball friend guys aren't gym rats and they weren't, I mean, they'll do some cardio or they'll do a little bit, but they're not getting technical about what muscles to work out real to improve them.
Right. So I do it now and it's helped out a lot. Just working on the strength, doing a little bit of workouts, things
stretching.
Like that. Yeah, a lot of stretching. Lot of stretching. Weighted ball work. So there's something called plyos, which is they have graphite inside the. It's a rubber ball, and inside it is like a specific weight of graphite. So you get ranges from 4 pounds all the way down to 3.5 ounces, and it's meant strictly for movement patterning for obviously pitchers. So. It helps your body move a little bit better with different weights, lighter weights. Your body's going to start making weird adjustments. It really does help with.
It makes a lot of sense.
Really does help with a lot of stuff like that. It really helped clean up my arm action, to be honest. So after I started doing the plyos and then those surgeries get done, and that's how I started throwing from that low 3/4. Now, that's originally why I started throwing that cutter, but. Sorry.
You're okay.
But at Missouri Valley College, that was essentially my bread and butter.
So the cutter's your bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. That's a great pitch. You know who made a career out of that?
Who?
Riviera Mariano.
That is true. And so I would say a
greatest closer maybe of all time.
I completely agree with that. I don't think anyone could be better than him.
He was an amazing closer. And so to think that was, he threw one pitch.
Mm-hmm.
The cutter.
That's it.
You want to, you go down the list of great pitchers over the years that had a good cutter, mm-hmm. and it's, we could be here all day. I mean, for Cardinal players, it'd be like Chris Carpenter.
Right.
Okay. Cutter also helped reinvent Waino. You look at the best years of Trevor Rosenthal.
Mm-hmm.
He was throwing not his bread and butter cutter, but he went from being a good pitcher, throwing a really fast velocity, mm-hmm. adding in a cutter, he became one of the best closers for 2 years. When he got rid of the cutter, he started going away.
And I think it's actually making a comeback in terms of pitches.
I think it should be that one, the sweeper. There's a couple of them that I just really feel are...
Right.
That sweeper is kind of a newer pitch you're seeing, which is really kind of this...
So it's funny you say that. So that sweeper is a two-seam version of a normal slider.
Correct.
So how I normally do both, depending on how I want the ball to go now. So this is how I originally throw my slider. You have the two seams that are right here. I put my index finger on this one and my middle finger right behind it.
Okay.
And I'll throw it from that 3/4. So it really does mess with a lot of guys when they got a ball spinning like this, breaking from this arm angle.
Correct.
It really gets a lot of guys.
That's your new pitcher, Grace, bread and butter pitch,
mm-hmm.
is the sweeper.
So for me, for that sweeper, I learned this off of Shohei, actually. They did the whole thing on it about how he throws his sweeper. He does a two-seam where you have those two seams and his finger, his index is right above that seam. And his middle finger is right above the second seam.
Is that helping you?
I like it. I like it a lot.
Feels comfortable?
I'll throw that on a count that I'm really confident in. You know, like if it's a 0-2 count, I'm going to try and throw it. But if it's like a close count, like I don't throw fastballs on 3-2 counts.
Right.
I think that's too predictable.
You think?
let alone a cutter. Because if 3-2 count, those guys, you already know a hitter's going to say, hey, 3-2 count, fastball's coming, right? I'll mix it up, throw a slider, throw a sweeper. But I'll normally throw a sweeper if I'm feeling extra dominant in an outing or extra dominant in that bat. But for the most part, I'll use that traditional slider. Even though it's a dead giveaway with that red dot when they see it spin, you can't really see that spin on that sweeper.
Make sure you use the sweeper more. Apparently, it's getting a lot of people out. Mm-hmm. Those who are throwing it high in Major League Baseball right now,
mm-hmm.
are doing real well.
Really?
Yeah. Pitchers who are throwing the sweeper really well dominated last year.
Really?
Yeah. So almost every good pitcher in baseball, even fastball pitchers, that sweeper became one. I mean, Gray's a great example. I mean, mm-hmm. he, the Cardinals just picked him up, but... runner up to Cy Young,
mm-hmm.
like 40% of his pitchers were a sweeper.
Yeah, his stuff is filthy. I've seen highlight reels of it.
Yeah, I'm trying to, there's, and he's going through and teaching a bunch of the Cardinals right now on how to adapt it. Waino was throwing it,
mm-hmm.
His best game last year, which was his last game. He was throwing that sweeper. He integrated that last year into his repertoire. So,
mm-hmm.
But you're finding those who are successful. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I know there was a lot more that were throwing it last year. I'm struggling. I want to say Kershaw, was throwing it a lot more last year and he was dominant until he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
There were several players that really have found, especially that aren't fastball pitchers anymore.
Right.
It seemed like older guys who had it, like a Kershaw, like a Gray,
right.
were fastball pitchers and then kind of backed off. And now their fastball's like 95, 96, 94, mm-hmm. not that, you know.
See, I would say now, aside from those extraordinary guys where they throw high velocity with a lot of movement, you get normally now, which I've seen personally, I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen a lot of guys where they either throw hard and there's no movement, or they throw kind of hard, but it's a lot of movement.
That's what you got to do. I mean, if you're not a hard ball thrower, you need that. Movement is your key, right? It's your friend. Like, so what's your fastball right now?
The hardest I've ever thrown was 93.3.
Okay, so you're not a huge fastball pitcher.
No.
93.3 on a fastball pitcher would be slow. That's mm-hmm. that's what Flaherty threw last year, and he was successful once every three games,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he's supposedly a fastball pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a guy like yourself, and you integrate a cutter, a slider, a sweeper. All of a sudden, your movement is deceptive.
So currently in my arsenal right now as a reliever, I'm working on the splitter right now. It's going well.
Oh, that's cool. I like the splitter. That's a fun one.
I'm a big fan of it. One of my relievers, or one of the relievers for the Cowboys, his name is Jonathan. Filthiest splitter I've ever seen. I mean, he's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I've been trying to work on mine, and so far I've got the cutter down. I've got both the slider and the sweeper. I'm adding in. I'm trying to get that changeup perfected, and I'm adding in that splitter. But usually what I've gotten away with a lot is that slider cutter combo, because what I usually do is I quick pitch, which gets a lot of guys. So I'll slide step, or I'll mess with timing by slow on a leg kick or super fast on a leg kick. Not necessarily like Nestor Cortez style stuff, but I'll do stuff to mess with timing.
That's good. That's awesome. So that's, and you're finding success. So how'd you wind up? So you start with the Cowboys and you've kind of integrated. How'd you wind up in Australia? I was going to ask you that. That's an interesting.
Well, prior to that, I'm going to tell you this, because this is where it gets crazy.
Okay.
So we talk about faith and everything like that. So I'm trying to figure out how to play professional baseball. And the guy that reached out was Sean Persky with the Cowboys. And at the time, I'm writing this whole resume to send it to him. Like I said, with all the velos and stuff like that. And the graduate assistant that they had for a pitching coach at Missouri Valley College, I told him, I was like, hey, I just got an opportunity to go to the Cowboys for spring training. He goes, oh, who's the manager? I said, oh, his name's Sean. He goes, oh, like I told him, I said, oh, his name's Sean. He goes, what? I live in the same town as him in Idaho. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah.
In Idaho, of all places.
Of all places. And so sure enough, I put the graduate assistant on the resume. Sean, the manager, calls him up and he's like, oh yeah, this guy's great. You'd love him, because they grew up in the same town. I had no idea.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so I was with the Cowboys for 3 years. At that time, it was pretty fun. I don't think I'll trade that experience for the world, because I've met a whole lot of characters. You know, I had a lot of fun out there. But what brought me to Australia was, so we finish up this 23 season, and one of my buddies that I used to play with back in college, his name Josh, who's from Australia, he goes, hey, listen, they're looking to bring on an import player. Do you want to go? I said, hell yeah, I'm going to go. I said, yeah, I'm going to go. Where's that? He goes, it's in Sydney, Australia. I said, Sydney, Australia.
That's awesome.
Live there, do everything like that. And they go, yes. So I said, okay. I signed the contract, like work it all out with all of them. Did all this stuff with them. Signed the contract, get out there.
That's why you disappeared for a while.
That is true.
And so, you were at the gym and then you were gone, and it was longer than your season. And I'm like, where did this guy go? And so, now I know.
That's funny that you said about Club Fitness. So that whole thing at Club Fitness started. So when I was with the Cowboys, like I said, I like to keep it low key about what I do and things like that.
Yeah.
So when I was with the Cowboys, I would just do odd jobs. So I'd say the oddest one was, I was a fry cook in New Jersey.
Oh.
And another one was, I was installing ACs on the 33rd floor of a government building in Newark, New Jersey.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Just odd jobs. But a majority of them was all construction. And so I said, you know what? I can't be doing a full season and then going to do construction and then going back to do a full season. I said, it's just too much on my body. So I said, you know what? I'm going to apply for a Club Fitness job. It's 5 minutes away from my house. I just drive there, go to work, do my thing, and then come back home. And plus, they have the sauna in there, which I really like.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm. So that's how I started working at Club Fitness.
You were there, and then you kind of disappeared for a while, and then you came back. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And that's where you were. So Sydney, Australia, great experience.
Yeah, it was great. I loved every bit of it.
That's a dream of mine. Up until the whole COVID thing, I was really a big Australia fan. I'm glad they're getting away from being so dictatorship. But I'm a huge fan of Australia. Beautiful country, beautiful people.
Absolutely,
just gorgeous.
Absolutely. So like I said, this is where it gets crazy. So I was both a starter and reliever there.
Okay.
And I would say in total, my stint there, I had 22 innings pitched with like a 1.25 ERA.
Wow.
Yeah, just shoved.
Your stuff was going. Was it the warm weather, do you think?
Part of it. So I tell everybody here, I said it's like the same weather as Miami.
Sure.
Very humid, very hot, because it's right on the coast. You get a lot of that coastal wind. So you just get a wide variety of weather, but it's majority hot. Now, when I was there, I did the 22 innings, and every single time, both before and after the game, I would always pray. I would say, hey, I don't know if this is the right path I'm going on. Please, Lord, show me the right path. I remember saying that before and after every game, because I enjoyed being out in Australia. But something inside me was just saying it's not it. Like, it's just not.
This is a season.
Yeah.
But this isn't what you're made for.
Yeah. And so even though I would say the only reason why I had that 1.25 ERA was the very last game when I gave up, I think, 3 runs in 5 innings. Prior to that, it was a 0.0 ERA.
Wow.
So
amazing, buddy.
So, like I said, I've never started before. My last start ever was rec ball. So it's always been out of the pen. And so I, you know, get a chance to start. The first start that I have, 7 innings, shutout. And then do my next start, not complete game shutout. And then the next start after that, I think it was either 7 innings or 8 innings. I don't quite remember. Because I black out when I get out of the mound.
Sure.
I completely just...
Well, you're focused. I have a lot of friends that are that way. They can tell you different things, but they can't tell you how many innings, but they can tell you who they faced.
Right.
They tell you what pitch they pitched.
Right. So I remember my best one was I threw a slider that I accidentally spiked. It was probably about 10 feet in front of the plate, but the hitter did Javier Baez and just swung at it. And it was like 10 feet in front of the plate.
That's a name.
Yeah.
Baez.
Hell, he's I don't know if he's doing well now, but I remember he used to be freaking good with the Cubs.
Yeah, he was really good. Yeah. So you're playing Australia, you come back here, I guess, after that's over.
Right.
So, and then how did you get onto the Ogden?
So prior to leaving Australia, I would always pray. I say, hey, I don't know if this is the right path. Show me the right path. And I'm not making this up, man. It's probably about 4 a.m. and I wake up in a cold sweat and I just stand up and I said, I need to leave. I need to go. Something's just telling me that I got to go. So sure enough, I'm trying to tell all these guys that, hey, like, even though it's the start of the season, I've only got 22 innings. I need to leave. Like, something's telling me to go. They weren't too happy with it, but I ended up going anyway. So I come back here and one of my buddies, that I play with on the Cowboys, he ended up signing a contract with Ogden. And the manager reached out to him and said, hey, I'm looking for pitchers. Do you know of any guys that are looking to play or looking? And he name dropped me and said, hey, he just came back from Australia. He's got 1.25 ERA with 22 innings. You need to sign this guy. And so I have a conversation with the manager, tell him absolutely everything from start to finish. And he's like, I really like you, bro. We're gonna sign you to a full year-long contract. So with a lot of these MLB partner leagues, they don't do it off of year. Like, they don't do like 5-year contracts or anything like
that. Yeah, they're year to year.
They're year to year. And so the reason why I say, like I said, part of that MILB shakedown where they just drop 120 teams to 90, Ogden Rappers, I assume, was part of it. And a lot of those teams in the league, same thing. So we play against, they used to be called the Grand Junction Rockies. So they used to be part of the, I believe, Single A for the Rockies organization. Sure. They had to change their name to the Jackals because they're no longer affiliated with them.
Gotcha. So, right? So you're playing in this alternative league.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's a good, it gets eyes open looking at you.
It really does. So, now I'm trying to look for new opportunities and stuff like that, which I'm not saying it's a bad thing that I'm with this team, but.
Yeah, you're going to pitch for there for the first year, for this year in 2024.
Right.
When's your season start?
May 13th.
May 13th. How long does it go?
All the way up until, so it's 97 games, I believe.
So by like late October?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to look at that again, but yeah.
Mid to late October. Well, that's cool. That'll give you a good chance to get acclimated here back in the States, throw some games, show your stuff, and hopefully have your splitter.
Oh, yeah. So I'm trying, like I said, I'm trying to get that splitter down because I think that would be awesome.
With your cutter.
Mm-hmm. Awesome with the arsenal.
I'm trying. There's somebody, it's an escaping me. It'll hit me later. who really did well with the cutter splitter. He came up as a fastball after Tommy John with the Toronto. He backed off on velocity and became more of a cutter splitter. Two seam. And he threw two seam and he threw a he had an off speed, but I'm trying to remember. He had something else. Maybe it was, anyways, I'll have to look it up. But he went on to become one of the greatest pitchers in baseball for about 8 years. He died in a plane crash. And for the life of me, I can see him. He played for Philly after Toronto and in retirement.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about.
Oh, no, it's on the tip of my tongue. He had one of the great. I just watched his game the other day because about once every year I'll watch the. So him and Chris Carpenter had one of the greatest pitching games in playoff history, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In 2011, yeah. And it was before the World Series that the Cardinals were going to win, but it was whoever won that was going to the World Series.
Yeah.
And they both pitched 9 innings, and it was 1-0. Cardinals won.
Wow!
What a pitching duel.
I don't talk about a pitching school.
Yep. So whoever wins goes to the World Series. Chris Carpenter against, what is it? I keep wanting to say Holland, but it doesn't seem right. That's going to hit me later. But anyways, but yeah, you know what I'm talking about. He was good, and he had that weird airplane crash where he was flying and I guess fell asleep or whatever, and it crashed it. And
so, yeah.
But
I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, he, amazing pitcher. But he had, that's what he threw after his Tommy John. He didn't rely on his fastball as much. And so he backed off, threw his cutter a ton, threw a splitter. It was cutter, splitter, and curve. But even his curve, it wasn't like a Waino curve. It was just like a traditional curve, off speed. And he made a long career out of it.
Right. So for me, I mean, there's possibility of me throwing 95 if I trained hard enough, but I don't have that high of a velocity compared to all the other flamethrowers that are 97, 98, 99. So I kind of had to learn how to do that movement, how to mess with guys' timings. Because my buddy said it best. His name's Manny. He's one of my closest friends. He was saying that he was in a league. He was actually in the same league. And he said, I saw 96, 97 on a daily basis. And he goes, whenever that guy came in throwing 88, 89 and had no movement, it was like batting practice. And it's kind of a wake up call. I was like, oh, like if I don't have movement on any of my pitches, then
it's just a dead ball in the middle there.
Right.
Ready to be hit. So here's a question I got for you. How's your stride? We were talking earlier about strides and how when you're not a high velocity, you've got to have typically one of the ways you make up for your high velocity is having a little bit longer stretch. Do you stretch a little bit longer than the average cap? Would you say that's okay if you don't? I was just curious when you compare yourself to others.
I would say it's
normal.
Yeah. Like it's normal. Like I don't overstride. I don't.
Yeah, usually you find, you know, I was just curious because a lot of people who throw low 90s, high 80s, one of the ways they make up too is just shorten the distance between them and the hitter because it's more deceptive,
right?
When you're lower velocity because they don't have, if you're throwing at a shorter stride, but you're throwing 98, but you're throwing, let's say, at a longer stride and it's 93, to the hitter, it looks the same because what you're doing is you're shortening the distance like it was 98 from a shorter stride. So, and of course, I was sharing earlier that Wainwright did that, and there's been other pitchers who have done that to elongate their career. You see it a little bit, like if you watch Kershaw, it seems like his stride's a little bit longer now. And so I just was curious if you made up any of that from there.
I think Tyler Glasnow did the same thing.
Yeah. He's another one. He's lengthened his. If you
look at
spring training, especially, I've been watching that stride during his first few games with the Dodgers because he's throwing fire right now. He's not only throwing hot, but he's that long stride of his.
Mm-hmm. You get those lanky guys, man. Those tall guys, they got long strides.
You know what it reminded me of too was with the way he's throwing right now, it was like a Tim Lincecum.
Yeah.
He would have that long stride out, the freak. You know, he had that weird arm slide and throw mechanism, but he had that long stride. And when I look at Glasnow now, that's exactly what I see. It's a slender, long stride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'd say I got video of it. I would say it's not long, but it's not short.
Yeah, we'll check it out here in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. No worries, my friend.
No, it's all good.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it. Anything that we missed on your career so far? We're with the Ogden Raptors right now and going into 2024 season.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot more wild stories.
I could tell stories for days about my experience with the Cowboys. So yeah. I'd say the best one was we had a field crew and they would take care of the stadium and all that. And just one day they up and left. And so our manager sends out a text. He said, hey, everyone's got to be at the field by 7 p.m. tonight. We got to take care of the field. No one else is going to. We got a game tomorrow. We got to take care of the stadium. So you see all these guys, all the guys on the team, they're getting rid of weeds. They're repainting the lines. They're getting the bases ready and things like that. It's just silly stories like that.
Well, that happens because it's a smaller league and they're not paying big money because, you know, like here, the comparable thing would be like the Rascals or what's that league over across the river?
Gateway and Grizzlies.
Yeah, the Grizzlies.
Yeah. So I remember the Rascals. They folded not too long ago.
Yeah,
and they use that stadium now for the O'Fallon Hoots. And I don't know because it's a collegiate team.
Yeah.
I don't know what league they're in.
I don't either. I know that you have the Grizzlies now are kind of the newer local one, you might say.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends now going to that were big Rascal fans.
Right. So I would say I tend to keep a little low on things just because not a whole lot of people know about the inner workings or the levels of baseball. So I would say there's when I was working at Planet Fitness, I would say not a whole lot of people understood what I did and what I do. So they'll ask basic questions. Like it's think of it like a job. Like they ask questions about your job, everything like that. And you tell them and they'll go, okay, yeah, they get it. But
they don't.
They don't.
They don't understand
so
how it all plays out as a player day in and day out, the grind, the workout.
Right.
Those smaller leagues that you're filling in gaps because, just like you said, a ground crew may not show up. The concussion people don't always show up. I've had friends of mine that it was their night off from pitching and they were doing concessions because not enough concession people showed up. And, you know. And you're dependent upon that because the contracts are small. You're just trying to, you're playing to make a basic living, but really you're playing to get exposure to continue to grow as a player when you're doing those type of leagues. You're not making big money. You're, you know, the idea is that these leagues exist to allow players like you to continue to develop because otherwise there would be nowhere. Especially with all the cutting of the dropping down from the minor league systems that they did, which is interesting because a part of that was that they were trying to push more for your college things to have that as a development thing, but then they've kind of switched rules back a little bit, allowing younger players now to get back into the league a little sooner. And so I've been trying to figure out what Major League Baseball is trying to do with all that. So they don't seem to, for an entity that has a lot of money, they don't know, it seems like they don't always know where to invest it well.
Yeah, I think they're going to start investing in those Savannah Bananas. Yeah, I think so.
That's awesome. I love those guys. They're fun, aren't they?
I read it somewhere. They're booked for the next 2 years.
Isn't that great?
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
I know.
And they got some fun players. They had Roger Clemens out there the other day.
And they just did a game in Astros Field at, I think it's Minute Maid Park.
Yeah, that was the one that Roger Clemens threw in.
Yeah. He threw in that. And it's like they're becoming such a big thing now that they just play against MLB teams.
Yeah.
I could see that happening in terms of growing the game and everything like that.
People love that stuff. They want to have a good time, watch a good, be entertained, have a good game, and enjoy it. So, do you follow a team at all?
I would say closest one is probably the Orioles.
Okay.
So, one, like a long distance cousin of mine. He played for the Orioles back in like the 90s.
Okay.
And other than that, I don't really follow a whole lot of those teams just because I like to stay by myself. I like to,
yeah, you know, do your thing.
I like to do my thing. And I don't know if it's like just me or if it's like other guys, but I don't really like following like what other ball players are doing, you know? Like I'm trying to do that, but I don't really need to see how they're doing on a daily basis, you know?
Yeah, you're a fan of the game, not a fan of an individual
team.
Right. I get it, man. You love baseball. You love to play it. It's something you find passionate about.
Right.
But the last thing you probably want to do on your day off when you're not playing is watch a baseball game because you'd rather be playing it.
I explain that to people all the time. I said, it's like you're doing a carpentry job and you go lay tile and then you go home and then watch more videos about people laying tiles. Yeah, it's for me, it's the same thought process.
Unless it's helping you in your job, you're not too interested.
Right. But I would say in terms of a team that I'd like to follow every so often would probably be Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I lived down there for a bit and I just thought that whole area was awesome.
Yeah.
But
they're a fun team. You know that Scott played with them for a little period of time.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, Don Mattingly was their manager and brought Scott over.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first year that Jeter mm-hmm. was the president
of
Miami. And so he was telling me about how that was with Jeter. It was interesting. So because, you know, that's his first time as no longer a player, but now mm-hmm. running the team. So, yeah.
So our assistant general manager for the Cowboys, who's also our broadcaster and our audio guy, essentially. He is also doing the broadcasting for the Marlins spring training.
Well, that's fun.
Miami spring training. And I think that's the coolest thing ever. His name's Ethan. Oh, he gets it done, man. I think he's going to be exceptionally good in the next few years.
That's awesome. I'm excited. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Well, I'll be following your career.
I hope it goes pretty far, but
we'll see where the Lord brings it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about faith and we know that we can trust the Lord. He's guided you so far. So I have no doubt that he'll continue mm-hmm. to give you some guidance in that. Man, I appreciate you swinging in today and dialoguing a little bit, man.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun. Man. This is fun. I enjoy hearing the inner workings of baseball. And you said you've had, how many surgeries did you have total?
I had three.
You had three. Mm-hmm. Two, all of them dealing with the same area?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was curious. All right.
And I wish we had more time. I would talk a lot more about everything.
Well, we'll just bring you back.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether it be after the season or whatever, we'll get you back here. I enjoy it, man. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have Scotty here so he can talk a little more. He definitely understands what you're at because he spent about 4 years doing that too.
Mm-hmm.
It took him about, I think, 4 years to start making it up and getting, you know, more views and getting more integrated. And then he did the Fall League, worked his way up and got a chance at Fall League and really showed off there. And that helped him get a shot. So,
yeah, because I think I've only scratched the surface when it comes to talking about this stuff.
Well, you're throwing in the area that I think you're going to continue to intrigue teams.
Mm-hmm.
And with your combination, I love the fact that you're a cutter. If you can get that splitter down, I think you're going to, I think can be a really good combo for you, especially as a lefty.
I think so. I think that's going to be a nasty combo if I get that splitter down.
Yeah, you throw that, and if you have confidence in it, because just like anything else, if you don't have confidence in it, you won't throw it. If you don't throw it, it won't make a difference.
So I will say quickly is that what really helped me with refining all that mentally was one of my old teammates back with the Cowboys as well. He said, hey, you want to come out and train and live with me in New Jersey, which is...
Oh, you got those New Jersey jobs. I gotcha.
So I said, yeah, why not? And so that facility, they focused heavily on the mental aspect of the game. So they did all the training, did all the throwing, did all mechanical stuff in terms of how to pitch, but it mostly was all mental aspect of it. Like if you're going to throw a pitch, throw it with conviction.
Absolutely.
If you're going to throw, have confidence in it. And that's what really, really did it for me was I really developed that confidence and then came back absolutely dominated. Because I started having more confidence in all the pitches and everything like that.
Yeah, if you can throw them, throw them.
Exactly.
Don't overthink it.
Right.
Exactly. A lot of people overthink it. They get up there and they try to overthink the whole situation.
Right.
Versus just trusting the ability that God's given you. If you know you can put it in that place, mm-hmm. put it in that place.
I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
It's
and then know your pitching, you know your hitters a little bit, know their tendencies, right? Mm-hmm. If you can know a little bit of a tendency of a hitter, then you know how to direct them. I mean, I look at a pitch as a good pitcher, as somebody who can kind of conduct. He can lead the hitter exactly where he wants him. Mm-hmm. He knows if I do this, he's going to respond this way. Mm-hmm. And then because of that, I can throw this and he's going to respond that way. And then I just do this and, you know, he'll tip it off maybe mm-hmm. on a good day. And if you want, I'll get him out. And if not, we'll go to, you know.
I think of it like chess.
Yeah.
You got to set
it up.
That's
exactly right.
Set it up and get that checkmate. That's essentially how I think of pitching.
Yeah.
But
you're directing it and setting it up.
Right.
If you do it well, you can direct it and set it up where you know what, you know, if he does this, then I got the checkmate. Mm-hmm. And so you just got to lure that hitter right down where you want him to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's good. A good pitcher can do that. Well, Michael, what a blessing it is to have you here today. For those listening, we'll bring him back. Don't worry. We'll get Michael back in here. Maybe give us a little update during the season or after the season. I got his number. We'll get him back on here. But that said, for those who watch, we appreciate your listening. Don't forget to support those that support us, like Andy McCollum at Resource One. If you have any financial planning needs, don't forget to give those guys a call at 636-458-1798. CS Design with all your web design needs, 573-436-3717. And Jeff Earhart State Farm Agency for your insurance needs at 314-821-JEFF or 5333. Give those guys a call. All their information, along with Brooks Bible College, is in the show notes. So click on those. And if you want to support the show, you can do so for as little as $3 a month. I get people all the time asking, does that make a difference? It absolutely makes a difference. $3 to $5 a month or $10 a month. Those little contributions help us in covering our basic costs to keep this podcast going. We appreciate it. It makes a big difference. So know that we appreciate those who are sponsors and do those things. And if you have the opportunity and can, please do. We'll get Michael back in here. We'll have a great conversation somewhere down the line. And until then, we'll catch you next episode. God bless, guys.